Hello, and a very warm welcome to No Heathen Land, a podcast retelling macabre, intriguing, and just plain weird stories from the past, from God's own country, Yorkshire. In my opinion, Yorkshire is the perfect breeding ground for the most weird and wonderful tales. In Yorkshire, we have the rolling, vast countryside of the dales, dark, tangled woodlands, remote back roads, but also industry, hard labour, a history of staunch religion, farming, tight-knit communities, immigration, a welcoming attitude, intolerance, riots. Much of this documented, a vast amount not. It's the stories in between the newspaper headlines that I really want to get into. Through my experience working in local history, it's really quite surprising how many odd tales you come across simply by looking into one single person's family history, for example. A newspaper article, a diary entry, a theatre playbill, a photograph. I'm very lucky to have made friendships and connections with interesting and enthusiastic people right here in Yorkshire. Each episode will feature one of them as a very special guest, where we'll delve into some of the stories we've come across that have fascinated, baffled, and sometimes unnerved us. Because of the subject nature of this podcast, some stories will not be suitable for everyone. Approach with caution. Hello, and welcome to episode 9 of No Heathen Land. I hope you're really well. I am not. So sorry if I sound a little bit off in my intro and outro today, but you know, we carry on. This episode, my guest is Helen Skilbeck. So Helen is a friend and she is a colleague of sorts. She was a very close colleague a few years ago. She is a librarian in the Local and Family History and Research Library in Leeds. And she's just great. Helen's one of those people that if you've ever got if you're stuck with something at work, an inquiry, or if you don't know how to do something, or you don't know how to find a record, you can't find a book, you can't find a date for something, you can ask Helen and she'll find it, and she'll do it so discreetly. And I just think she's like a secret a genius, really. Maybe it's something to do with the vast amounts of experience and hard work, which I maybe don't possess those qualities as much as she does. But yeah, I was really excited to get Helen on the podcast. She's been on my list of people to be on right from the beginning because I knew she'd have really good stories. She's got a lot of experience in local history, and we do always like finding out, you know, weird things in this like line of work and interest. So Helen today is going to be talking about two, I want to say, lost oddities of Leeds. I won't tell you what they are. You can go forth and listen and see what she's talking about, but she's very knowledgeable, and just we had a really interesting chat, and I think this is going to be a really interesting and popular episode that people will really like. So I'd love to hear from you if you listen. I'll be back at the end, as always, to say thank you for listening and to share where to find out more and the social media page. So enough from me and my voice full of cold. Go forth and listen to episode 9 of No Heathen Land with Helen Skilbeck. Hi Helen, and welcome to No Heathen Land. Helen is a guest that I've wanted to have on for ages, and I think you've always been like on my radar to come on the podcast.
Indeed, yes.
So Helen Skilbeck is the librarian in Local and Family History and Research Library.
Yes.
In Leeds Central Library. So can you tell us a little bit about how you got there, and because I've got another non-Yorkshire person on the podcast?
Yes.
But I would say that you're an honorary Yorkshire person, because you've been here quite a long time.
I've been in the north for well over half my life now, yes. So when I left university, I went to the University of Leeds. And when I left university, I started working in Leeds Public Libraries, mm-hmm. and did that for a few years. Then upped and left, went to Glasgow for a while, and then came back to Leeds, and it just so happened that my coming back to Leeds was coinciding with a job in the local and family history library. Mm-hmm. So I applied for that straight away, luckily got the job, mm-hmm. and been there maybe 14 years, 15 years, some crazy amount of time now. It feels like forever. But I really enjoy it. It's a really interesting job.
It definitely is, isn't it? So me and Helen met because that is where I also worked for about 5.5 years.
Yeah.
And I think at least 3 other people that have been on the podcast, that is how we also met. Or
yeah.
maybe 4 other people. We're like a little clan that like can never let each other go. Well, that's how I feel anyway.
Yeah, no, I know. You're always included in meetups and things like that. Anything social, you're involved.
It's really, that's really nice. So yeah. I feel like it's like our own little, like, tiny little community of people.
Yes, definitely.
Because everyone is just so enthusiastic. And, like, I think the reason I like talking to everyone individually as well is that everyone's got, like, a different focus, a different interest. So that's quite nice, having people come in on the podcast to talk about something that they're particularly interested in.
Yeah.
So we will move on to what Helen is going to talk about today. And it's 2 sort of like, I guess like Leeds legends, really. So we've got one that is a lost place, I suppose.
Yeah.
And then the other is just sort of like a weird and wonderful construction.
Yes, definitely. It's well described. Both long gone,
yeah.
Both 19th century things.
Yes. So do you want to start with the first thing, which I think most people, especially if you're interested in Leeds history specifically, well, I think you'll have heard of both of these things, but you'll definitely have heard of this or have like some inkling of where it might have been because of one particular thing, I think.
Yes.
So, okay,
definitely.
Take it away.
Okay, so the first thing I wanted to talk about was the long gone Leeds Zoological and Botanical Gardens. And sometimes they're just known as the gardens, the Royal Gardens, or the Leeds Zoo, or the Headingley Zoo.
Mm.
And they were in the kind of Cardigan Road area of Headingley. Cardigan Road actually kind of intersects the whole site. So if you are walking up Cardigan Road, there would have been a zoo to your left and to your right.
Mm.
And all the kind of shrubs and trees and wonderful plants would have been both sides. There may still be some leftover trees from the site.
I've also heard this as well.
Yeah.
We'll come back to this.
Definitely,
I'll tell you what I've heard.
So we're going back to 1840 is when it actually opened. And it was one of these things where other cities had these botanical gardens. So Manchester had one, Sheffield had one. And Leeds kind of thought, well, maybe we should have one of these as well. And it was almost a way of getting kind of a countryside feel, a bit of fresh air for people not very far out of the city centre.
Yeah.
It was only, you know, 2 miles or so.
Mm-hmm.
And so to fund it, it was really funding by subscription. So people would kind of, you know, and it was probably very middle class, kind of the elite people funding it. So money was raised, there was a design competition. There always seems to be design competitions for a lot of the buildings in Leeds. So,
especially in the 19th century, it seems like a thing. Like, there's a design competition for every single building that was constructed, and then somebody won. And
and
there was like 20 odd people had entered it. So.
Yeah, so this was
like
some
kind of fight for the.
Yeah, there always seems to be loads. And there were 17 entries for this, and the winner. It seems like competition winner. The winner was William Billington, and he was a civil engineer and architect, and I think he was from Wakefield, so he wasn't very far away. And he drew up this wonderful plan of the zoo, and you can see that in the central library. And he had space for kind of winding paths. There was going to be 2 ponds with islands, a fountain. There were going to be a conservatory and orangery with lots of kind of exotic plants.
Mm.
But there was also going to be space for animals as well. And it doesn't sound hugely impressive now, the animals that they actually did have. But I found a newspaper article that said that there were monkeys, an alligator, a raccoon, a peacock, 2 parrots, 4 guinea pigs, swans, an owl and an eagle. So that made up the majority of the kind of the animal side of things.
Just 1 raccoon?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Great.
But the only big animal that they had was the brown bear.
Mm-hmm.
and this was described as a decently behaved brown bear. And this is one of the things that you can still see on Cardigan Road, is the remains of where they kept the bear. And this is the bear pit. Mm-hmm. And it looks kind of like a very miniature castle. It's got little turrets, and you could go in these turrets and there'd be a winding staircase and you could stand at the top, and apparently people could like throw their sandwiches or buns down to the bear, because it because it was a bear pit, so it was quite kind of a long way down, and there's a real kind of like hole in the ground behind it. Mm. And yeah, that was their big star attraction. It's very odd. I think they did want to get more animals, but it never quite happened. So the bear was the big one, and all the others tended to be more birds and a raccoon and a little alligator.
The bear pit, I will post a photo of the bear pit on the in the notes and on the Twitter as well, because we do have photographs.
Yes.
All the ones, and also you can still go and look at it.
Yeah, and it's all been done up by the Civic Trust a few years ago, so it does look a lot better than it looked, you know, 10 years ago.
And it has a plaque on it, doesn't it? So you can actually see
where it was. There's a little kind of board explaining what it was. Certainly, I was speaking to someone recently, and they didn't know what it was, but they said it was at that weird castle thing. And I was like, oh, let me tell you about the weird castle thing. There was a bear there.
Yeah.
So it was, so it had these animals and these birds and these kind of decorated gardens and flowers and so on. Now, it actually opened in July 1840, and it cost about £11,000 at that time. I'm not sure how much that is in today's money, but
I think that's quite a lot.
Yeah. They wanted to raise about £20,000 through subscriptions before, to keep it going, basically. Because they had all sorts of problems when it kind of the idea was generated. Some people didn't think it was a great idea to have it where it was. Some people thought a cemetery would be more needed for that area of Leeds. So it was nearly a cemetery. The land itself, there were some drainage problems with it, so they had to spend a lot of money on getting the land usable to be these gardens. So there were all sorts of issues before it actually opened to the public. And then when it did open, there were quite a lot of financial difficulties as well. It cost money to go in. So I think it was 6 pence for adults, 3 pence for children, and plus you had to get out there in the first place, so that was an added cost. And people worked, you know, Sunday was the only day off, and a lot of people they worked every day. Sunday was the only day off, but the gardens weren't really open on Sundays, so they have that opportunity to go. And eventually it was decided they would open, I think, at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, so that people could still attend Mass, and then they could go in the afternoon. Mm. But there was a real controversy over whether they should be open on Sundays at all. Yeah. And so there were always financial difficulties, not making enough money to keep going. Mm. But I'll tell you a little bit about the opening, because it was in July 1840. And yes, it was this idea that it was fresh air, people could come and like clear their lungs, because it was away from all the kind of pollution of Leeds city centre, and it was like being in the countryside. And they built high walls around it, the ground was sloping, there were fruit trees all around, geraniums, dahlias, pinks, pansies, so it must have looked really pretty when it opened. They opened the gardens at midday, but not many people were there. It was a bit wet and a bit soggy, so slowly, as the weather improved, more people came. So there was about 1,500 people in the end, but it tended to be these kind of well-to-do people, people that could afford to go in, people that had the time to go in and see. They sent a kite up in the air saying the name, the Zoological Gardens, and the date it was opening. That flew up in the air, apparently, for hours.
Wow.
Godfrey Wood was the caterer there. Now, he did a lot of catering around Leeds. He was responsible for the food that was at the banquet after the town hall was opened by Queen Victoria.
Oh, that's the same caterer.
Yeah. So they had little tents with refreshments and jellies and ice creams and things. But one thing they did, they had some birds of prey in an enclosure. and they put some jackdaws in with them, presumably for food, because one of them got ripped apart by these hawks in front of this horrified crowd just watching.
On the opening day?
Yes, on the opening day. And I think this caused a bit of a fuss, and people weren't very happy with this, that they thought it'd be a lovely jolly afternoon, and suddenly they're seeing this poor bird being ripped apart, and there was no need to kind of feed it like that, but it's not ideal. A bit later in the year, in the October of 1840, they had this event where there was meant to be a hot air balloon. So there was a man called Mr. Russum, who was a Leeds aeronaut. And the idea was that he would have a hot air balloon and it would come up and float up from the gardens. But they had a problem because there wasn't any gas nearby to fill the balloon. And the nearest they could find was in a field next to the Cardigan Arms on Kirkstall Road.
Mm-hmm. So Cardigan Arms is a pub,
it's
isn't
a
it?
Pub, yeah. Yeah.
It was also a pub there.
Yeah, so it probably is only, you know, a mile, half a mile away, but it's not particularly close. And then if they filled it there, they would then have to somehow pull the balloon to the gardens on ropes, I guess, somehow convey it fully inflated to the gardens. But in the end, they didn't need to do that because it took so long filling it with gas that it got to 3 PM and they said, we just can't do it. We'll just have to cancel the whole thing. So this big grand event was cancelled straight away.
That's so sad.
It's kind of, I think they did quite a lot of galas and big firework festivals and things just to make a bit of money to keep it going because it just wasn't getting enough people in. And I found one particular event was the Great Wizard of the North. He came to the actual gardens. Now, he was actually a Scottish man called John Henry Anderson. And he's kind of credited with bringing magic from being like a street performance into more like a theatrical performance, bringing it into theatres. And he'd performed to Queen Victoria and Nicholas I of Russia, he'd also played to. And this advertisement said it would be his last show in Leeds and that 20,000 people would be able to come and see his magic powers, and there'd be equestrianism and tightrope dancers and bell ringers and then fireworks in the end. And because they had these kind of little lakes, they would have water fireworks. So they would kind of just have the fireworks coming up from the lake area so that they were all reflected in the water and it looked really pretty.
Oh, this sounds good.
Yeah, I know, it does, doesn't it? Yeah, so that's what they did, a lot of kind of galas, a lot of special events and things, but ultimately they ran out of money. So in 1848, they had to sell the gardens. Someone called Thomas Clapham took over the running of them. He changed its name to the Royal Gardens. Mm-hmm. But, you know, 10 years later, he just couldn't sustain that. So he again sold it off. And this time it went to lots and people built properties on those lots.
Yeah.
And they're the houses you can see on Cardigan Road now. Mm-hmm. You'll notice they're set back from the road. Some of them are really big houses. They've got a lot of front garden space. Mm-hmm. So this was all land that used to be the zoological gardens. And you can see the bear pit still, so that's still there. There's bits of the external wall that you can still see, especially I think on Chapel Lane, I think it is, so kind of parallel to Cardigan Road. Quite a lot of the external wall is still there, so you can get glimpses of what it used to be like. And certainly we've got maps you can superimpose and see the actual land layout and what's there now.
Someone has said, I feel like a few years ago we had an inquiry in the local history library and someone was saying that they lived near there or something, and we had a look, this is such a bad story, but we had a look, so like a bit scant on details, we had a look on Google Earth, I think it was, and we could make out like an outline of something where the trees are placed, so you could sort of make out a shape of, that's still sort of in a shape of how part of the garden was, which was really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't remember whereabouts it was, which is like part of my bad storytelling and memory. But I sort of I'm sure it was someone lived or had lived in one of those houses.
Yeah.
And we were trying to trace something, I can't remember what.
Yeah.
But we had a look and you could see the shape, like a fancy like tree shaping.
Yeah, and it's certainly the houses either side of Cardigan Road, because Cardigan Road pretty much went through the middle of the site.
Yeah.
So the houses either side are very different to the surrounding streets. Mm. So you can kind of see lots of kind of terrace houses everywhere, and then suddenly you've got these big individual houses with big gardens, and that's where it would have been, the zoological gardens. And they kind of almost met at a kind of point to the south, so it almost kind of like branches out from kind of V-shape and then up towards Headingley. So there are still, signs of what it was. I think one of the front gardens, you're supposed to be able to see like the outline of where the fountain was.
Oh, wow.
And one of the front lawns, I think there's a kind of a bit of a dip in it, which people think might be where one of the lakes was, and where that was filled in. So there are kind of little clues out there. And some of the trees probably are surviving from the 1840s.
It's quite amazing. That's a long time ago, isn't it? And there's still all these like little like remnants of what was there. So aside from the things like the opening and this wizard, and obviously like a couple of the things that you mentioned, was there very much else reported about it? Was it reported that it was closing in the newspaper and things like that, that it wasn't going well, or...?
Yeah, you do find the odd articles, and I've seen letters to the press saying how disappointed the people of Leeds are, that it can't be kind of made a go of, and it needed more time, and it needed more investment, and surely some gentlemen of Leeds had the, you know, the odd few thousand pounds they could put in towards the upkeep. Certainly when it was closing properly, this is about 1857, they had to get rid of the animals. And so they had an auction, so you could buy the bear in an auction.
Oh my goodness, I wonder who bought the bear.
No, I know. I've not seen anything reported on who bought it, but I've seen the advert saying, it said it like a Russian brown bear up for auction. And it was, any animals that were still surviving, they had to get rid of because the land was being developed for housing. So
I would suspect maybe it was a circus that might have bought it.
Yeah,
quite possibly. Loved a circus at that time.
Oh, yeah, they did. Definitely did.
And, well, actually, all those animals could have gone to one of the circuses because they always had weird animals.
Yeah, monkeys and a raccoon doing tricks or something. So I think the financial issues were fairly well reported, but there just wasn't enough income, not enough people were visiting it to get that regular income. Yeah. So they relied on things like galas and big events to try to keep themselves afloat.
Yeah.
And eventually that money just ran out.
And you can imagine how it happens. I mean, we know just now how hard it is to upkeep somewhere, especially with animals.
Definitely.
I mean, in Leeds we only really have like Lotherton Hall, don't we? That's got animals. And you have to pay to go there now, don't you? Which is a bone of contention, I think. But it must have been a lot of work, because presumably as well they had staff that they had to pay to do the gardening and
to keep the
gates and taking the money and
so
caterers apparently.
Yes, so it would all have been a bit of a drain, and if they weren't getting the numbers of people that they were hoping for, then there's not much more they could do. I think Thomas Clapham, when he called it the Royal Gardens, he did reduce the price, so it was only 2p to go, but still it wasn't kind of the success that he wanted it to be. And so eventually just kind of died a death and went.
So during that time in the 1840s, what was that area of Leeds like? As in, was it an affluent area? Was that a more affluent area than, say, the other side, so like the Hunslet side? So that's probably like the same distance from the city centre but the south, isn't it?
You'd imagine so, because it was far enough from the city centre, so you weren't getting all the kind of the factories, the smoke, the pollution. It was that far removed, and I think certainly people did tend to go north and west to kind of get away from the pollution. And so you'd have quite an affluent kind of population around, but I think they needed the working class to go and keep the prices and keep the money coming in to keep it going, and they just weren't really going in the numbers that they needed to go. So,
and I think the most surprising thing about it, and I think the thing that people don't really realise, because we did always get a lot of interest and questions about it, because we had we have in the Leeds Central Library the plan, don't we, of like how it was laid out, so we always got that out at like any opportunity. Because it is really interesting. I think people are usually shocked about how short-lived it was.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's like somewhere now opening. Was it like 17 years, 16 years it was open?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, all gone. Yeah, so it kind of feels like it wasn't really given enough chance, that it needed longer to kind of really embed itself in the kind of population's thoughts and be thought of as a kind of day out. But I guess as Leeds got bigger and expanded, it maybe was a bit odd in its positioning if it was becoming more residential around it, having these big gardens that weren't popular. It probably was the way of thinking that we just need to get rid of them and use this land a more profitable way, or get houses built and get people in that space instead. So it's a shame. It'd be lovely to still have them, wouldn't it?
Yes.
And just, you know, somewhere nice to have a little walk.
Yeah.
I guess we've got Woodhouse Moor.
In that sort of area. I suppose we are quite lucky in Leeds with all our parks.
Yeah.
Because there's so many, and there are beautiful gardens at other places, like to some.
Yeah, definitely.
So we are lucky. But yeah, I think it's a really interesting little lost treasure that was just so short-lived and really quite a long time ago that's still remembered and like documented.
Yeah, and so, still having those signs, if you know where to look, to see where it was and see the bit of the wall and see the bit of it. And yeah, it's nice that they have survived for so long, definitely.
So for this story, I will post pictures of the bear pit. I will post links to the Secret Library blog, which is written by staff in the Leeds Central Library and other people as well sometimes.
The guest bloggers,
but we've definitely got blog posts on the gardens with pictures.
Yeah.
So I will post that too.
Excellent.
So, okay, so moving on. What is your next sort of oddity, I suppose? I don't know what to call this. It's such a weird thing, but again, it's something that I think people will have heard of.
I hope so, because I bang on about it so often.
Helen's absolute favourite.
Anyone that comes near the library, I go, did you know? So this is something that only really existed for like a day. And it was an archway made of real loaves of bread.
Yeah.
And it went over Commercial Street, kind of towards the Brigget end of Commercial Street, and it was a kind of welcome arch for a royal couple visiting Leeds. So we're going back to 1894, and the Duke and Duchess of York were coming to Leeds. Now these later on would become King George V and Queen Mary, who I think they're the grandparents of our current queen, I think.
I'm not entirely sure,
but yes. But we're back in 1894. Queen Victoria is still on the throne at this point. So they were coming to Leeds to open part of the Yorkshire College. And the Yorkshire College is now the University of Leeds. But back then it was the Yorkshire College. And they were going to open a hall, I think a library, and part of the medical school. So it was the kind of university campus area. And they were coming to Leeds and staying at Temple Newsom House. And then the day that they were coming to Leeds, they would start at Temple Newsom. The royal carriage would come, pick them up, drive them into Leeds. They would go up and down a few streets, have a set route that people could stand on to welcome them. They would then go to the town hall, say a few words, and then up to the university area. So it was a really exciting thing for Leeds. People really got on board with this royal visit. So there were decorations all over the place. You know, the tramway poles had bunting and flags draped from them. People, if they didn't have decorations to hand, they would put like tablecloths out their windows. So especially kind of upper story windows had tablecloths draped from them instead of flags. The mayor said that there should be no work done on that day so the public could come out and see the royal couple. He didn't officially declare it a holiday day, he just said there should be no work done. So whether people are allowed not to work, I'm not sure. But it was very exciting for Leeds. There were streamers and flowers. The town hall had this crimson gold kind of decorations. And at that time, there was still a fountain outside the town hall in the Victoria Square. And that was kind of transformed into this giant bouquet of flowers.
Oh my God,
so everyone kind of, really went all out for it. And these two gentlemen, Henry Child, who owned the Mitre pub on Commercial Street.
Yes.
And his friend Mr. Morris, who was a baker in Lands Lane, they had this idea that they would create this archway out of bread.
That's
as,
so funny.
As a kind of welcome to the city.
Welcome to bread.
Now, they built it on Commercial Street. The work couple were not due to go down Commercial Street,
right.
But they were going along Briggate. So from Briggate, you could look down Commercial Street and ideally see it, I guess. But it's not really known whether they did see it or not. There were, it sounds like the whole day was a bit of a disaster because
lots of things usually went wrong.
Yeah. So to start with, the royal couple, they were at Temple Newsom. Their royal carriage didn't arrive. So they were stuck there waiting to come into Leeds and there was nothing to take them there. In the end, they took one of the carriages from Temple Newsom estate itself and they started coming into Leeds. Apparently they met the royal carriage coming in the opposite direction, but they couldn't really jump from one to the other mid-route.
No,
so
I wonder what he was up to. Why was he so late?
Yeah, I think there was some miscommunication somewhere along the line.
Yes, this is always the case.
And then various kind of dignitaries and councillors were meeting the couple on the city boundaries, which was somewhere along kind of York Road on the way into Leeds.
Mm.
And they were supposed to escort the royal carriage, but they kind of set off too fast. So all these dignitaries went off in their carriage and the royal couple were going a lot slower and kind of waving at people on the route and they just got left behind. So all the dignitaries arrived at the town hall and then everyone just had to kind of like wait a while.
How far is Temple Newsom to the city centre?
It's maybe like 4 or 5 miles, something like that.
So in a carriage, took you a fair bit of time to get there.
Yeah, definitely. And they did kind of a bit of a winding route to get into the city centre.
Mm.
So they definitely went past Beckett Street and the workhouse on Beckett Street. And then they came kind of back into Leeds and then they went around some of the... So I guess the idea was that they could then wave to everyone at the workhouse as they went past.
Hi everyone, you're having a lovely day in the workhouse.
It's a little bit strange, but that went wrong. And because they were delayed, we're not quite sure if they stuck to the same route or whether they kind of...
bypassed it.
Yeah, whether they skipped a few streets and whether they saw this archway or not. Mm-hmm. But these guys, Henry Child and Mr. Morris, I tend to think this must have been a drunken late night conversation. Why don't we build an archway out of bread?
That's an amazing idea.
It would be brilliant. You're a baker, you make the bread. But they were really serious about it. They got an architect involved. So this man called Thomas Wynne, he kind of created this kind of wooden and iron frame because somehow the bread had to stay in place. And I'm not quite sure how it worked, but he had some kind of frame that the bread presumably could kind of slot into because they weren't going to kind of glue the bread together, so it needed to kind of support itself. And it was this great big archway, about 25 feet tall, and it had like sheaves of corn sticking out the top and decorations, and it had a G and an M for George and Mary at the top. They used about 1,500 loaves of bread.
Wow.
And they were big loaves of bread. They were like 2.5 feet long, so they were huge loaves of bread. It would have been about 6,000 normal size ones, but they decided make them big and then there's less of them to stack and pile into this arch.
I wonder how long that took, because
must have taken a while.
A long time.
Yeah, all these loaves of bread. And they thought it kind of, the whole structure probably weighed over 5 tons, was with the frame and then all this bread stacked. But they couldn't use much to kind of keep the bread together because the idea was that they would dismantle it and give it away to the poor.
Yeah.
So they couldn't use anything like cement or anything that was going to be toxic to humans. I remember telling some school children about this once, and one of them asked, did they use jam to stick it together?
Oh, that's a great idea.
I love the idea of like jam and bread all stuck together, but the reality is no, they wouldn't have wasted the jam.
True. I mean, maybe now you could do them with jam.
Yeah.
Jam and butter.
Yeah, something
like
that. Or
maybe that might get a little bit drippy if it was warm.
So this archway was built. It stayed there overnight. It rained a little bit. I don't know, how long it took to make the bread, so how old some of the bread was.
Some of it must have been, hopefully used those for the bottom ones.
Yeah, apparently in the night... some like children stole some of the lower ones, and you can imagine birds and like rats being at it overnight as well. But the next day they dismantled it, and they'd arranged this kind of ticketing system. So they'd given tickets to local vicars around Leeds and said, you know, your poorest parishioners, give them one of these tickets, and that will entitle them to some of the bread from the Bread Arch.
Mm.
And they could come the day after to the Holy Trinity Church schoolrooms, so quite close to a commercial street.
Yeah.
And they could turn up with these tickets, and the ticket included the whole family. So it wasn't just one per person. If you had a ticket, you could bring everyone. So, you know, your husband, wife, 10 kids, they could all come down and get a bit of bread each.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it can't have been the nicest of bread.
But it was free.
But yeah, it's free food, so yeah, you're not going to say no to it.
I think that's quite a nice little takeaway from the story. So even if the royals didn't see it, which, you know, they might not have done by the sounds of it, it's actually quite a nice sentiment. This, like, possibly broken, silly plan turned into something quite nice, actually.
Yeah.
Stale bit of bread, but
maybe
you do have a little bit of jam left over at home and you can make it nice.
And what they actually did, they raised a bit of money and they provided packets of tea and soup for people as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then so many people turned up that they ran out of bread from the Bread Archway.
Wow.
So they had to go and source more bread. So some people got nice bread, like
fresh bread.
Rather than saying they had a bit of the Bread Arch, I think I'd be more concerned with getting fresh bread rather than stale, old, mouldy bread from an archway.
It's been nibbled at in the night.
Yeah, definitely. So it would have been, a lot of people turned up. They think they distributed between 3,000 and 4,000 of these tickets, and they might have seen around 15,000 people come the next day saying,
15,000 people,
please can I have my bread now? So you can see where they ran out quite quickly.
And that was in the church?
So it was in the schoolrooms, like next to the Holy
next
Trinity
church.
Yeah.
Oh, 15,000 people.
So that would have been almost as big an event as the actual war visit. Exactly. People lining up to get their bread. But it's crazy. The final thing that went wrong on the day of the visit with the royal couple is they were coming up Park Row in the carriage, and a man ran out from the crowd and he ran up to the carriage and he got as far as opening the door. The Duke thought he wanted to shake his hand, so just kind of stuck his hand out. I'm not quite sure what his intention was, because at that point the lances all kind of descended upon him. And he got kind of trampled underfoot with the horses.
Now,
apparently he wasn't seriously hurt, and he was taken off to the town hall, and they determined he was of unsound mind.
Oh dear.
So that was another thing that happened on the kind of route in to Leeds. So it does sound like it was a slight disaster after disaster.
Oh,
but still, it was a day out
an
for people, and there was bread at the end of it, so it can't have been too bad. But I love this. In the library we've got this wonderful print which is really vividly coloured, and it shows the archway, and it's actually a calendar that Mr. Morris seems to have created for the next year, and it's got the months of the year around. And there's a photograph on Leodis actually showing what the bread arch was, and so you can see the actual bread and the way it was arranged in the arch.
I think that's one of the nicest things, that is there is like actual evidence that it happened, and then this lovely print of it, which is just it's just lovely. Like, I can just picture it, how nice it is.
Yeah,
like pinks and blues.
Yeah,
and
it's
so nice.
It's really nicely kind of coloured. And in the newspapers at the time, there were little drawings of it as well. So they had drawings of some of the banners that were up in Brugge, and they said things like hearty greetings and welcome, and there's one that said long live the royal trio, and I was like, but there's only two of them, who's the third person?
Like, it's a dog.
No, it was a baby. They had a 3-month-old baby.
I
don't think the baby was with them on the visit, but because
not.
It was a newborn. Long live the royal trio and things like that. So the newspapers kind of drew in like kind of little drawings of the banners and the decorations, and there's a little drawing of the Bread Archway in the Evening Post, and it does look like the print that we've got as well. A really bizarre story, and something that only lasted like a day really. It was put up for a special event and then taken down and given away to the poor, and there's no trace of it now. You'd never know it existed were it not for like this photograph and this print and the newspaper report of this bizarre Fred Archway.
I love it. It's such a fun story.
It's brilliant, isn't it? And I think I just came across it by chance when I was looking for something else, and I happened to be looking in a box full of prints, and I found this and went, what on earth is this? I thought, it doesn't really look like bread in the picture, and it had a date on it, and so I went away and had a bit of research and yeah, found this whole story, and so now I tell everyone I meet. Yeah. You know, the Fred Arch.
And it's it is something that is like, I suppose if you're interested in Leeds local history, you've probably heard of it. But other than that, I think it's always quite an exciting thing to talk about because it's so weird.
It's so bizarre.
Like, other places must have done similar things. Like,
yeah,
it's such a strange idea to just think of randomly.
Yeah.
But it's such an interesting sentiment, and I really like it. I'd be happy to see a Bread Arch now.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be so excited.
Crowdfund for bread arches around.
I wonder if it'd go against like food standards though.
You probably would, wouldn't it? You wouldn't have to eat it at the end. Maybe you could create it. Yeah. I'd love for like children to create kind of replicas in Lego or something like that, and just nice.
I'll think of other kinds of food that would be good for an arch, maybe.
We should have done it for the Queen's Jubilee, shouldn't we?
Well, next week, isn't it?
Well, maybe we've got time for miniature ones.
Find some people in a pub at night and see if they want to build a bread arch next week.
It'd be brilliant. I think there was one in Rothwell, but it wasn't made of actual bread. I think it's called the Bread Arch, but I think that was mainly to do with its location. It was somewhere to do with food rather than actually being made of bread. So I think there's a photograph of that as well, but it doesn't look like it's actual bread. Whereas one in Commercial Street was definitely bread.
Yes. Thank you, Helen. That was excellent. So much fun. So at the end of each episode, I usually just like, sometimes I have to lighten the mood because sometimes these episodes aren't very cheery, but I think this is quite a cheery one. But I usually just ask, what things you have been enjoying? So, like, is there any TV or films or music? Or have you been anywhere good recently?
Ooh, let me think. I went to the theatre not that long ago to see Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Yes, we
both. I believe you were there. Yes, it was really good. And it was so nice to be in the theatre. It was the first time I've been to the theatre since kind of pre-COVID.
Yeah.
And so it was lovely to have that kind of shared experience, especially with a musical and the kind of the sound and the performance and having a real live band. And I sometimes get a bit weepy when like live music is in front of me because I just get a bit overwhelmed. It's so brilliant.
It was really impressive, and we were really close as well,
weren't
we?
Really, really close.
We were like 3 rows back.
Yes.
And it was Divina Di Campo,
yes,
who was robbed of the first place in Paris a few years ago, but was absolutely incredible.
Amazing. We were so close that we had to avoid eye contact because she would occasionally talk to the crowd, and it was just close enough to be a little bit uncomfortable. Please don't talk to me. But it was lovely, and it was it was a really good performance. So that was really nice going out to the theatre. Indoors, telly, I've been enjoying Derry Girls.
Oh, I haven't watched the second series I have watched the first one, so I am going to get round to it.
I think we're on series 3 now.
Oh, is it 3?
I think it's the third one that's just finished.
Oh,
so there's there's been 6 normal episodes, and then they just did an hour long special at the end, and I haven't seen the hour long one yet.
I've heard it's a weepy one.
I'm amazed how that programme can make me laugh and then just like in a few seconds it's I'm like crying.
It's like that perfect time that we'll both remember, I think.
Yeah.
Because we're slightly different ages, but it's definitely like a time that we'll both remember.
Yeah.
Like all the cultural references and
yes. All the 90s music. That every like few minutes is a different song, and I go, oh, I remember this.
I must catch up on it because I'll just keep seeing things by everywhere. I don't want it spoiled.
And then I watched what's it called? Only Murders in the Building. Have you seen that?
So a few people told me to watch this. Yeah. Because it's about a podcast,
it's
isn't
a true crime podcast.
So I watched the first episode and I really liked it.
Yeah.
So I am going to carry on. I mean, if anyone that knows me really well will know this is what I do. I watch one episode and then forget about it for 3 years. Yeah. And then I'll come back to it and I'm like, oh, that thing that I've just watched, everyone watched years ago. And then I'm back on it.
Just caught up on
it. So yes, I have watched this episode and I liked it a lot. And I must go back to it. Have you watched it all?
I watched it all and I really enjoyed it. Yes.
I think there's going to be another series as well, I heard.
Yes.
Is it open for another series at the end? Or could it just be something?
Yeah, I think they'd have to do a different storyline completely.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. If you're watching the first one, I can see how
I think it's kind of... I think it is. I'm really bad at remembering the ends of things.
I think I've got a feeling that in the first episode it shows you the end at the beginning.
Oh, yes, yes.
So
I think it
does,
yes.
What's going to
happen. So I really enjoyed it, and it was nice seeing, it's Steve Martin, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, so had quite a different role.
Yeah, I hadn't seen him in anything for ages, so it was really nice seeing him. And
it's much
Martin
more
Short,
like
and, yeah.
sort of, he's quite close, like a serious character. Or just in the first
one,
I guess.
Yeah, but there's a lot of humour in the whole programme, and it's, I increasingly am gravitating towards things that aren't too, you know, scary or thrillers. I want more light-hearted things, just at the end of the day, just something nice to watch. So that kind of like fulfilled that brief quite nicely.
Yeah.
Where there's a little bit of jeopardy, but not too much. Mm-hmm. And a lot of humour. And so it was really nice.
I know that like short episodes are nice, aren't they, as well?
Oh, they're so nice.
The thought of watching like something so long sometimes a little bit daunting.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's nice to have like a nice short little
thing just before bed, have a quick watch of like an episode, and then that's it. Yeah, so that's been really nice as well.
Fabulous. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
And goodbye, anyone that's listening. Bye. As promised, I'm back again. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you to my guest Helen once again. Isn't she just absolutely great? I really hope you enjoyed that episode. As always, there will be links to photographs from the Leodis archive and any blog posts where either of these two subjects feature. So we've definitely got images of the Bread Arch. We've definitely got a picture of the plan of the Zoological and Botanical Gardens as well. So that'll all be shared, and I will also be sharing pictures on the Twitter page, which is @NoHeathenLand. Come and have a look. I would love to chat on there. Just drop me a line to say hi and let me know if you listened. There are 8 other episodes you can listen to, and can you believe that next month I'll be recording my 10th episode? I don't think I've ever been as consistent with anything ever. I'm really quite proud of this little like mini project that I've made for myself. And I've got a great guest next episode as well, so I'm excited to share that with you. So that's all from me. Again, I hope you're well, I hope you're safe and happy, and I will see you in the next episode. Bye.